An interview with Steve Smith today on the Ultimate Ground Rules.
But I have raised you up for this very purpose, that I might show you my power, and that my name might be proclaimed in all the earth. Welcome to The Ultimate Ground Rules, a podcast built specifically to encourage, empower, and strengthen the faith of coaches as they live out their God-given purpose to develop the next generation of leaders. And now, your host, Dave Pritchard.
Hello and welcome to The Ultimate Ground Rules. I am your host, Dave Pritchard, and today I am excited to bring you our second interview of the summer. And it's one that is guaranteed to deliver. A few housekeeping items before we get started. In case this is your first time joining the show, the Ultimate Ground Rules exists to be an encouragement to coaches as they work to positively impact their student athletes. In order to reach as many coaches as possible with an encouraging word, I want to ask you to like, share, and subscribe to the podcast. In addition, dropping us an iTunes review, it can't hurt either, as it only makes the show easier for coaches to find. Recently, I sat down with longtime Baylor University skipper Steve Smith. Coach Smith currently serves as the pitching coach at Auburn University, as well as being a current member of the USA Baseball development staff for the 17 and under age group. Coach Smith is as transparent as they come. In this interview, he shares the story and growth in his faith, how it has helped him to deal with disappointment, as well as his thoughts on what the players of today need most from their coach. With that said, grab a pen and paper because you will want to write down the wisdom he shares as the Ultimate Ground Rules presents to you, Coach Steve Smith. Coach, thanks for joining us.
Dave, thanks a lot for having me. This is a treat. It's an honor.
Oh, man, it's an honor for me. I want to start, just congratulations on your trip to Omaha and a great season.
You know, thank you. Getting to Omaha is probably as difficult a thing as there is in college athletics. And, you know, our guys hung in there. It wasn't a smooth, path to the end of the year. We had a lot of struggles, a lot of adversity, but we had a really good 2 weeks at the end. Really good weekend at Georgia Tech, and then another really good weekend at Chapel Hill. And you know, the lesson in there is just that, no matter how your year goes, when you get a new season, you know, when you get to the postseason, then it all starts over. And for us, that was a really good thing.
Well, you're already ahead of the game. I wanted to ask you, you know, I'm a big believer that every season is a learning opportunity and you learn something new every year. And I was going to ask you, you know, what did you learn this past season? But I think you hit it right there. You're saying, you know, it's never over till it's over.
Yeah. You know, I've been to the NCAA tournament as an assistant or as a head coach 21 times. And have had more heartbreak than celebration. And the thing that just really, you can never predict anything in this game. I don't believe really in baseball, there's any such thing as an upset, because there's so much of the game that is out of your control. And it can be a very random game. I think we talk about, in the game of baseball, controlling what you can control, which I think is very true. That's really what you have to be able to do is try to control what you can't control. But then you're really trying to influence what you can't control. You can't control what you can't control, but you try to influence it. And you know, but in tournaments and short little stints, it's not always the best team that wins. It's the team that plays the best at that time. And, you know, that's why when we won at Georgia Tech, I knew what they felt like in the other dugout. And when we won at Chapel Hill, I knew what they felt like in that dugout. And, you know, that tempers a lot of your, as a coach, it keeps everything in perspective. You just can't forget that.
That's a good lesson there. So on a show here, the main goal is to be an encouragement to coaches, and this is faith based. And so just trying to encourage coaches in their faith as they set out to, you know, shape the lives of young men. And so I want to, you know, try to hear a little bit of your story and your path. But just first question here is, how do you see your faith shaping your role as a coach or your job as a coach?
Well, for one thing, I don't think you can, at least for me, I don't think any of us truthfully can compartmentalize our faith. You know, we can, you know, compartmentalization is kind of a buzzword of recent years. And I think there's probably some value in being able to do that in some way in some parts of life. But, you know, it's apart from faith, there is no life. And apart from faith, there's not anything that we're going to do meaningful with our lives or in our lives. And so, I just don't see any separation or I don't see any separation. I take my faith with me everywhere I go. And if that's, you know, in a dugout, or if that's, you know, on a field, or if that's in a boardroom, or if that's wherever that is, that's just, it's going to go with me. You know, and we live in a world where, you know, we're being challenged more and more to keep that part of our lives very compartmentalized, to keep it very quiet, and to, and I'm not suggesting that we walk around, or that I walk around, you know, with a Bible in one hand and, you know, and forcing something down somebody's throat, because that's certainly not what Jesus did, and he's the model. He is the ultimate model. I'm not the ultimate model, and really, I think a lot of what has happened in the church, you know, and with us as believers, is Jesus hasn't been as rejected as we have, and you know, I don't want to be someone who makes it easy to reject Jesus. I want to make it as easy as I can for them to want to know about him. But for me, athletics, for as long as I can remember, whether it was back in high school or maybe even a touch before that, but for sure by high school, you know, I mean, I looked up to athletes. I mean, I looked up to coaches, and if they were believers, I really looked up to them. Probably too much. I probably put guys, you know, had too high expectations on them. And that's a real struggle, probably for me, is that I just have too high expectations. You know, we're in a fallen world, and even believers are going to make mistakes. And, but I saw athletics as a platform. I wanted to play as long as I could. I loved baseball. Baseball is the thing that came to me the easiest. Football was the thing that probably challenged me the most. And I think without it, I probably would have never played professional baseball, because I think the playing high school football was by far the most challenging thing I'd ever done. And I think it forced me to improve as an athlete in so many ways. And that kind of, I think that really, I don't think I would have ever been, had a shot at professional baseball if I hadn't played high school football. And, you know, we're at a day and age now where specialization is the buzzword. And it, you know, there's a lot of debate out there about multiple sport guys. And I can only speak from my own experience and a handful of experiences that I've observed as a coach. You know, I just can't do anything but encourage that. But at the same time, you know, everybody has to make decisions that they feel are best for them. But for me, it was the platform. And then, you know, honestly, the biggest surprise that I've had, I really believe this, it was when I became a head coach. And I had been an assistant. I'd been a graduate assistant for 2 years at A&M, and then 5 years as an assistant at Mississippi State for Coach Polk. And I think between Mark Johnson at A&M and Ron Polk at Mississippi State, I could not have worked for two better men and better baseball men. I think I look back on that now and I'm just, you know, I'm awestruck by it. And it took me a couple, 3 years, you know, as a head coach to kind of figure out who I was, but there were some moments that were really challenging, that forced me to ask the Lord some questions. I didn't like how things were going early on as a coach. I didn't like the biggest thing I didn't like was the whole lack of control. I'm probably not different, you know, not too much different than the average guy. You know, I want to fix it. You know, if something's right. broke, I want to fix it. If, you know, if I do all the right things, I want all the right results. And that's just not baseball. That it's probably not any sport, but I envy football coaches because, you know, they can take a knee and run out the clock. They can put their, you know, they can put their guys back in the game after they've taken them out. They can call a play that gets the ball to their best player at the most important time of the game. You know, there's so much more they can do. And even in basketball, they have a lot of the same opportunity. But in our sport, in baseball, hey, buddy, once you post that lineup up there and you know, you might put on a bunt here and there, but your disposition is going to be in the hands largely of the guy on the mound. But really, all, you know, it's in the hands of the ball itself. And that was really tough for me. The first time we went to an NCAA tournament when I was at Baylor was 21 years ago, 1998, in Gainesville, Florida. And it was a big moment. You know, it was my fourth year there. You know, our whole staff, you know, we had worked really, really hard. We had good players. We had really, you know, gotten the thing going. And now we're finally in the tournament. And, you know, we open up the tournament with the University of Richmond. And at the end of five innings, we're ahead in the game 9-0. And to make a very long, painful story short, we wound up losing that game. I don't remember the final. It was something like 13-12 or something like that. But it was such a devastating loss. You know, it'd be devastating if you lost that game in the middle of March. But this was, you know, in late May, early June in an NCAA tournament. And, you know, the guys were, you know, were devastated. I felt like at that point in my career, I was pretty decent. You know, this is one thing I was better at than I got less good at this later. But at that point in the game, I really felt I was hurting for the players as much as anything. And so, you know, you get those guys together after a game, you kind of get them through the moment, you go do the press conference and say all the right things there if you can. But then on this occasion, I went back to the hotel and in Gainesville, and I walked in the door. I closed the door behind me. My wife was the only one in the room, and I looked up at the ceiling, you know, as to look at to the Lord. And I said something like this. I wasn't yelling, but I was, it wasn't calm either, but I just said, you know, you tell me that there's nothing in this life that I'm going to go through that you don't understand. And I said, I can't say exactly what I said, but I call BS on that. And my question to the Lord right then and there was, what do you know what it's like to not be in control? You're in control of everything. And, you know, that was really, I look back on that now, and I mean, this story has a better ending. It has a good ending. But at that moment, I didn't feel like I blasphemed or denounced my faith even privately. I felt like I hit a pause button. Right. And I needed an answer to that question. Well, you know, that answer didn't come right then. And the next day, you know, we go out and we play the number one seed, the host team, Florida, and we beat them. And, you know, then the next day we go out and play University of Illinois, and we're in the bottom of the ninth of that game with a one-run lead, nobody on, and two outs. They get three straight singles to tie. It. It goes 14 innings and we lose. And, you know, I was so happy. I was so happy to get out of the country. That was my first time to be able to work with Team USA. And I was gone, you know, like 2 months of that summer. And I wasn't a head coach. I was an assistant. That was great. I didn't want to be a head coach. And the whole time I've got this question hanging over me, you know, hanging out there, you know, what do you know what it's like to not be in control? Come back in the fall, go through fall practice and get to December. And, you know, our coaching staff, who I had two great guys with me, Steve Jonigan and Mitch Thompson, you know, I could talk about those guys for a long, long time, but the three of us went down to a high school in Houston and did a coach's clinic. And I got up and did my part. And then when I was done, I went and sat in the back of the auditorium at this high school. And there was another gentleman that was presenting. And I honestly don't know who he was or where he was even from. I was kind of sitting on the back row half asleep, you know, just relaxing. And I heard him say something that got my attention. And he said, he just said something real simple. He said, there's no growth without change. And, you know, I was sitting there and those words just struck me. And I was sitting there thinking to myself, you know, I don't think I need to change, but I sure need to grow. I was sitting there having the argument within myself about, you know, growing and changing. And I was, you know, I was really having that kind of talk with myself. And then he said this. He said, players don't need a motto to say, they need a model to see. And honestly, those two things came within probably about 5 minutes. And as I sat there thinking about what I heard, I really had the feeling the Lord was talking to me. And it was almost like he was saying, I've heard your question. Hang in there. I'm going to answer it for you. And so, you know, that was late December. January rolls around and we go to the ABCA convention that year in Atlanta. And one of the guys I had worked with at Mississippi State for a few years when I was there, he was an older guy, older coach, Joe Hudak. He had become the head coach at Winthrop. And, you know, Joe pulled me aside at this in this hotel and he started bearing his soul to me. You know, he was struggling in a relationship and I'm listening to him trying to think how I can help him. And as I'm listening to him and he's talking about all the things in his attempt to reconcile in this relationship and, you know, he was willing to do anything. He's willing to go to counseling. He's willing to do anything to salvage this relationship. And as I was sitting there listening to him, I thought to myself, you know, he's doing everything he can do. He really can't control how she responds to him. And the moment I had that thought, I realized there's one thing God didn't control. And it was simply our response to him. And I mean, that's, you know, in my world, that's like Sunday school 101. It was a truth I had known my whole life, but had just failed to really realize and comprehend in the context of what I was doing as a coach. And, you know, I got up after we finished talking and I got on the elevator and I went up to my room in that hotel. I walked in the door. I closed it behind me. I looked straight up at the ceiling, raised both hands and said, my bad. And, you know, I wish I could tell you that took all the, you know, pressure away or all the frustration away, but that didn't happen. But what it did do, number one, it let me know God answers prayer. It really, maybe more than anything, right. You know, it wasn't so much about, you know, the answer, it was an answer. And it was a real clear answer to the question I had. And so it convinced me, and I'm going to be honest with you, it's something that I lean on today, that I leaned on this day, that times like that with the Lord and answers to, you know, such clear direction and such clear answers to prayer, they were real and they were purposeful, and that there is a purpose for everything that I've gone through that's led me to this day, and it will prepare me for what I'm going to face tomorrow, what opportunities the Lord may have for me. You know, I'm going through a really, you know, just uncharted territory for me. It's not uncommon. Right. It's just uncharted. I mean, I lived in the same place, coached the same place for 21 years, you know, at the institution I played at, wife was a cheerleader at. I mean, we had a real, that wasn't a job. That was never a job for me. It was never a job for me. And I didn't realize it as clearly until after I got pushed out that the whole time I was there, I thought I was working for the family business. And so things that would happen in other areas of campus or other areas within the athletic department, other teams, anything, you know, that really should not have been my concern, but it was, because it was my family. Mm. And I think the other thing that really, you know, complicated it even more than that is that it was a family that stood on a faith. It was an institution, you know, that held Jesus as its foundation. And so, like I said just a few moments ago, I think my expectations, you know, I've come to learn this. There's no such thing as a Christian university. There's only universities that have Christians. And that's, I'm not being critical when I say that. That's just reality. That's just the way it is. And to expect otherwise is just to be naive and to be misguided. And, but it made that hard. So, you know, now I'm sitting here, 4 years removed from that, you know, and until I got here to Auburn, you know, Melinda and I had left Waco, and we left a home we lived in for 14 years and a lot of friends and a lot of, you know, dear friends, put all our stuff in storage. And until we came to Auburn, it was in storage for 2.5 years. This has given us an opportunity to start again. But the issue that I get confronted with all the time is, you know, aren't you ready to be done? Aren't you ready to the retire word is something I hear often. And I'm not, you know, trying to be Superman or anything, but I don't see a precedent for that in scripture. And I have, believe me, if I did anything after I got, you know, after I was fired, I turned to the Lord and I turned to my Bible. And I've been in my Bible, and I've been a believer for a long, long time, but I had never read it as intensely or journaled from it or written from it as I did in the year and a half, you know, through the, you know, second half of 2015 and all of 16. And because I wanted to be prepared, I wanted the Lord to give me some direction and some meaning for what I was going through. And I was always looking for models. I was always looking for who can I relate to in scripture? Who is it? And I found a bunch. You know, that, and then I spent the rest of my time going and trying to become a better coach, you know, trying to learn as much as I could, observing other teams and, you know, and seeing guys, you know, really trying to treat it like a working sabbatical. That's one thing coaches don't get to do enough of when they're actually going at it, because they don't have time. And, you know, all of a sudden I was granted some time, and I really try to take advantage of it. And I think I have, and it's benefited me here. I mean, I came in here with some new ideas and a whole lot of energy.
Well, let me ask you this. And I mean, maybe it's a sensitive question. I think you hit on it a little bit, but, you know, I know there's a lot of high school coaches that listen, and I know, of a guy in particular just in the last month that's been let go, kind of a small town politic kind of situation. So, any coach that finds herself in that kind of situation, regardless of what level they're at, you know, what kind of advice would you give them?
You know, I believe this. I believe in the sovereignty of God. And if I do, then I have to live through. I have to live that. You know, the verse in, I think it's 1 Peter, where it talks about humble yourself under the mighty hand of God, and in due time He'll lift you up, casting all your cares upon Him because He cares for you. You know, that first part of that scripture, I've read that a lot growing up, you know, heard that many times, but it really didn't hit me until after I had been fired, kind of what that verse meant. Humble yourself under the mighty hand of God. And what that's really saying is this: the mighty hand of God is the sovereignty of God. So that anything that I come in contact with, anything that happens to me, God either allowed it or He caused it. And if I don't humble myself under that, what's the alternative to that? The alternative to that is to fight it. The alternative to that is to argue with God that this shouldn't have happened, or to bear a grudge, or to be unforgiving, or to become bitter. I mean, if I believe in the sovereignty of God, I don't have anything to be bitter about. If I believe in the sovereignty of God, I don't have anything to complain about, because He's allowed this to happen. He either allowed it or caused it. Take your pick, and He's going to use it for my good and His glory. And you know, I say that like that's, you know, like I've dominated that. I haven't dominated that at all. I mean, not at all. But, you know, you back me into a corner, and that's what I believe. And that is the truth, whether I believe it or not, it's the truth. And so my word to anybody that's dealing with anything, you know, whether it's the loss of a job, it could be anything. I mean, my gosh, I mean, Lord, I just lost a job. I mean, that's, right. You know, who am I to complain? I mean, I just... And honestly, there's times I get into that place that I think, you know, how could the Lord even care about this? It was only a job. But I do think God is big enough to care about it. And I think it's a part of His plan. And I'm just going to try to be as faithful as I can. I pray a couple of prayers frequently. One of them is that tomorrow morning I'll wake up and it'll become clear to me that what God's purpose was through all of the last 5 to 10 years. You know, that it'll make sense. Wow. The other one is that the Lord will open a door that when a door opens, if and when another door opens, it'll be a door that that only He could open. And that's kind of, mm-hmm. that's my heart right now. That's where I am in my better moments. That's where I am. but I would share those things with anyone that was going through something like that.
Right. Wow. Well, I appreciate you being so transparent on that. I'm going to shift to, you know, you're trying as a coach, trying to make an impact on your players. And what are some things that you think maybe that you do, or even you guys do as a unit there at Auburn, to try to really make an impact on your guys?
Well, I'm glad you mentioned the guys here, because, you know, Butch Thompson, I've known Butch a long time, and Butch he's very transparent himself and very open himself with his faith. So anyone that knows Butch out there is going to know more than just his background as a coach and success, you know, as a pitching guy before he got here. They're going to know Butch. It's going to be really, really hard for you to be around him for very long and not know where he's coming from. And the same could be said for Gabe Gross and Carl Nunnemaker. So I think that, you know, kind of like I started, none of these guys compartmentalize their faith. So,
right.
We're working at a state institution, and we've got eyes on us and that kind of, I don't mean that in a bad way. I mean, that's just, I don't think the Lord wants us to challenge the state. You know, I think the Lord wants us to be who we are. And if we do that, then, we won't be the ones that are having to proselytize. The guys will come to us, and that kind of stuff. And so, but to your question, I think the first thing, you just have to be real. And players, I don't care if you're a believer or a non-believer as a coach. The first thing that a player wants from a coach is transparency and honesty. Players can see right through a lack of that. And that will compromise anybody's ability to lead. It'll compromise your ability to even to coach. I mean, forget about, the impact of faith. I mean, if you can't be honest and transparent with your players, you're not going to win.
Right.
But also, if you want to have an impact eternally, then I think there's two things involved in that. One is you got to be transparent, and the other thing is you got to be humble enough to ask for forgiveness when you need to. Because there's no coach, no believer, no Christian coach, no guy that's he is following Jesus and he wants to be Jesus's guy on the sideline, off the court, in the dugout. You're gonna fail. We're gonna fail. I have failed. I mean, it hurts me to know some of the stuff that I've said, some of the things I've done, some of the ways I've acted. But in almost all of those occasions, what it did, it afforded me an opportunity to stand before a group of men and ask them to forgive me. I think it's true in your own home. I never saw a lot of difference between my home and my team. I mean, there is a difference, but there's a lot of similarities too. And one of the similarities is just, humbling yourself, and just being honest. When you blow it, maybe the most important thing you can do for anybody that's seeking, that the Lord's trying to draw, maybe the most important thing you can do is show that, you're not above them, that you're as flawed as they are, and you just know it. And so I think those are the two things. For me, it's always been about being transparent. And then when I did stumble, it was about owning it and asking for forgiveness.
That's really good. And maybe you've already answered my next question, but there's a lot of talk about, culture and just kids changing and have kids changed. And I just want to ask you the question, what do you think that players need most from a coach?
Accountability, leadership, model. I think what I heard, back in 99 at that high school clinic about players don't need a motto to say, they need a model to see. I think that's it. And I honestly think that's what Jesus did. We needed a model. And that's what he did. And, that's pretty big. I mean, because the times that you need to model stuff are usually in the extremes. How do you handle winning? How do you handle it? How do you handle a lot of success? I think one of the because of our society and because of really the importance in the minds of so many people of football, that I think that the most important hire that a principal or an athletic director or president might make anywhere is the head football coach. And I think the thing you have to ask yourself when you're hiring that guy is, can he handle success? It's not, you know, will he be successful? The issue is, who's he going to be when he is? And can he handle it? Because the fans are going to esteem him to the point where he could do tremendous harm. He could take a whole institution down. And the other side of it is, how do you handle failure? How do you handle losing? How do you handle that? That's one of the things in baseball. Our best football coaches, honestly, they don't have to deal with that much. I mean the best ones. I mean, the ones that are real successful, they, you know, that 9-1, 10-1, 9-2, you know, hey, they have to be able to handle success, because when they are successful, they're going to get put on a pedestal. But in baseball, oh my gosh, I mean, you know, I didn't look today, but most every day I look at the major league standings, and I think the last time I looked, there might have been 3 teams out of 30 that had won 6 out of 10 games. I mean, that's pretty amazing. And, you know, and you take it on down to our level, I mean, maybe your best teams at our level are 7-3. You know, in the SEC, I mean, you talked about what a great year we had this year going to Omaha. We were a game below 500 in the SEC. We had a losing record in the league. You know, that all gets forgotten when you have a couple of weekends, you know, at the end. But, you know, how do you handle that? How do you handle losing? And honestly, that's really that's what makes baseball, I think. You know, I like a lot of sports, but I think baseball might, you know, mirror life a little more closely than some of the others do. And, you know, I know why the Lord put me in baseball. I love football, and I think I'm more naturally predisposed to being a football coach. I would much rather play life out of a 3-point stance. And yelling to motivate is right up my alley, you know. And those things don't happen in baseball. And you know, you have to be able to handle the ups and downs. As my dad used to say, you got to keep your highs low and your lows high. And that is life. I mean, that is absolutely life. And that's just, I mean, I just think that's why the Lord put me in baseball to change me.
That's pretty awesome. Let me ask you a question from a high school coach perspective. So you get, you know, kids every year that come into your university there and guys that you recruit, and what do you want the high school coach to accomplish? And I'm not necessarily talking about the baseball part of it, because I know you guys know what you're looking for, and you got to have guys that can play. But from a young man's perspective, and maybe a little baseball mixed in, what do you want the high school coach to have accomplished with that young man before he gets to you?
That's a great question, and it may be a difficult one to answer, because I probably could give you a different answer 30 minutes from now than the one I would give you right now. But you know, I think that. I think discipline. And again, that's, how can a high school coach do that? I mean, all he can do is model it and teach guys, you know, require guys, hold guys accountable, you know, to a routine, to their preparation, you know, and again, you know, in saying that, he's doing it with a much wider variety of ability level of kid than we would. You know, I mean, it gets, you know, it starts all, they all start looking the same a little bit when you get here. But, you know, and at the high school level, you've got your top and your bottom, and there's a pretty big gap in between. And, but I just think that, what's the word? It's more than discipline. It's respect. maybe that's the word. It's respect. I think that's the thing that, as I've had time to think about, you know, restarting, if I was doing this all over again, you know, what would be my, what's one word that might capture everything. And I, as I've done this lately, the word, I keep coming back to the word respect. You know, what rules would you not have to have, or what rules would what would it not cover if your culture was one that was just built on respect? It's respect for yourself, it's respect for your teammates, it's respect for those beside you, it's respect for those above you, it's respect for those below you, it's respect for the game, it's respect for those outside of you that are watching. You know, that word to me is that would get to a lot of the issues, and it would also accomplish a lot of the goals. If I respect the game, I'm gonna work really hard. If I respect the game, I want to run hard 90s. You know, if I respect the game, I'm gonna be a great practice player. You know, if I respect the game, I'm going to get my sleep. I'm going to eat right. I'm going to be prepared when I come to the ballpark. I mean, all of the things that you try, you know, the whole rules that curfews and things like that. If you just agreed, you know, we're going to respect the game, that take care of a lot of stuff. You know, I mean, you know, I want to respect the team. That might take care of being late. You know, I mean, they just, to me, the word respect has a lot of reach. And, you know, I think that's what we have to teach. And maybe if it's been taught, or at least it's been demonstrated some early on, maybe we can take it a step further.
That's awesome. Well, let me flip that question around on you. And so, you know, whether it is the draft, or just graduation, when your time is done with a young man at Auburn and you sit back and look, what is it that you have hoped to accomplish?
You know, I can think of two things. How would it be measured? Okay. You know, how would it be measured? I think, and I won't be around to know. Okay. But I think it'll be measured by how many former players want to be at my funeral. You know, how many of them actually show up, and how many of them would even want to? All right. That to me will say a whole lot about if they love me and how much impact, you know, I had on them one way or the other. I think that'll say that. My prayer is that I am going to be my best man at the end, that I will be the best man God has made me to be, created me to be at the end. I'm not my best man today. I'm on a journey, you know, but my desire is to continue to grow, and that the day that I'm no longer here, that I will have left this world my best man.
That is deep. That is awesome. Well, Coach, I appreciate your time and thank you for coming on the show. And I like to end every interview with one last question. And just, if you were in a room with a bunch of young coaches, what is the one thing or two things that you would want to leave them with?
I would say to don't forget why you first got into it. You know, my wife used to ask me two questions, you know, a lot when I first started doing this. She would ask me, did you have a good day? And I never knew how to answer that question. Mm-hmm. And then the other question she would ask me was, do you love your players? And, you know, early on, I thought I did, and I certainly wanted to, but I know for sure that early on winning was really important. And it was hard for me to feel good about anything I did with the players when we weren't winning. I'll tell you one quick story here, you know, to the moment that this hit me. We were starting a season, and we had gone out to Long Beach State to open up the season. But we played them quite a bit back then. They were always really good. But we happened to go out there and win a game. And so when we came off that road trip, we came right back to Waco and literally got on the bus on Monday to go to Monroe, Louisiana to play Louisiana Monroe. And I was excited about it because there had been a left-handed pitcher I'd thrown in relief out at Long Beach that I was going to get to start on that Tuesday night there. And I was really anxious to see him throw. Well, he goes out there and we get beat 15-3. And, you know, I go back to the hotel room. Now my wife's not with me on this trip. And I didn't yell at the Lord. I went in the room, shut the door. And I this was my question this night for the Lord. I said, Lord, is there anything else I can do? I mean, is there anything else I can do? I don't like this. I do not like being high when we win and down when we lose. I do not like the roller coaster ride. I do not like, you know, my life being judged by a scoreboard. I don't like it. And I literally, I was still in my uniform, you know, gosh, it's had to be close to midnight. And then there was a knock at my door. And I thought, oh my gosh, what's happened? And I go to the door and I open it. And one of my freshmen is standing there at my door in his boxers. And he looked at me. He looked at me and he said, Coach, can I tell you something? I said, what? He says, I wanted you to know I made an A on my physics test. And I looked at the guy. I think I still had a chicken leg in my hand. And I was in full uniform. We'd just been beat 15-3. And this dude wanted to tell me he'd made an A on his physics test. And I looked at him. I said, is that it? And he said, yeah, that's it. And I said, well, great. Good night. The next day, we go out to play the afternoon game. It's the top of the first. Our first guy gets on. I won't go to all the detail, but I got thrown out of the game, one hitter into the game. I mean, nobody out in the top of the first. I got thrown out of the game. And so I go back in this locker room. I sit there for 2.5 hours. I have absolutely zero to do with this game. I'm not in the dugout. I wasn't sending messages. I couldn't even hear. I had no idea what was going on in the game. And when the game was over, they all come bouncing in. They're happy because we won 2-1. And they told me, yeah, Jason, he would have had a no hitter except, you know, they laid down a sack bunt, you know, after a walk, and we made, you know, that turned into a hit. And so, you know, I was fine. I remember thinking, great, we won. I mean, I was back up again. And, you know, we got on the bus and we got a 5-hour drive back to Waco, and I'm sitting there with my feet propped up with a good movie on and, you know, just loving life. And all of a sudden there's another freshman standing next to me at the front of the bus. And I looked at him and he said, Coach, can I ask you a question? And I said, sure. And he said, why do people believe in Jesus? And I sat there, and I'm ashamed to tell you, but the first thought that I had when he asked me that question was not now. This is a good movie. Hmm. I mean, I didn't want to have that conversation right then. That was my first instinct. My second instinct was to gather myself, and I asked him. I said, why are you asking that question? And he was back there on the bus doing his homework. And he was in a New Testament class at Baylor, and he was reading through the book of Matthew, and he just wanted to know what the big deal was all about. And so I pulled myself together. I shared with him why I and others believe in Jesus. He thanked me, turned around, and went back to his seat and sat down. And at that moment, I sat there, and I realized that in less than 24 hours since I had asked the Lord if there was anything else I could do, He had sent two angels to me.
Wow.
And both of them to remind me that what I was doing was not just on the field, including, you know, Kelly Shopik asking me the most important question in the history of the world. And so that's what I would say to those guys in that room. I would say, you know, don't forget what it's all about. Just don't forget it. And don't let the scoreboard dictate to you how you feel when you go home. Just don't.
Well, Coach, that is awesome. And again, I want to thank you for joining us, being so transparent and just giving us some of your time. And have a heck of a time with Team USA.
I'm looking forward to it. Be a week in the Chicago area with some of the best 17 and under guys in the whole country. It's always good to be around good players like that and a lot of great coaches.
Well, best of luck at Auburn. And again, thanks.
Thank you.
Thanks again for joining us on the show today. Don't forget to like, share, and subscribe to the podcast so we can reach as many coaches as possible with a word of encouragement. Never forget, your job is important. God loves you, and He has a plan for you. Continue to build tomorrow's leaders and stand firm in the faith.